It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you to 11 o'clock tonight. Patty Vasquez in at 11. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Coming up at 10, Character Flaws. That's our Wednesday special where we bring you sketch comedy, improv, performance, characters, all the stuff that this great city has to offer. It's one of the great things, Pete, is that Second City actually moved into the Trib Tower. So they have like their business section. So a lot of actors that I've known and comedy writers and people for years are trouncing their winter jackets through the lobby here. And I'm like, yo, okay, come in. I want you to do some bits. Let's do some bits. So that's great. I mean, that's actually a great thing. It's not so scary for them to come downtown. Because if you've met an improviser, they're like, if it's not in Wrigleyville or Old Town, I don't really know where it's at. So that's then they get older and they move to they move to Andersonville. That's usually where I've got it down. Maybe they'll make it to Evanston. Maybe, but doubtful. That's a long trek. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. This hour, in an effort to develop lifelong readers, readbrightly.com has put together a list of the 50 best books for 7 and 8 year olds. In other words, Read Brightly's got your back. If you're a parent of a 7 or 8 year old, or you have been, or you're planning on being one, you know how difficult it is to find good books for your kids to read. And not just books, I mean, just to find the interest in reading, because there's just so much competition for their eyeballs. I mean, the iPad can't get my kid to not look at that thing for more than, 20 minutes. You want the book to be sophisticated, but you want it to be age appropriate. You want it to be a good story, but you want it to teach lessons. And it can't be like, funny character goes to the zoo. That's over. That's 6 years old. We got to get rid of that. When Read Brightly took to the task of putting this list together, they naturally turned to our next guest, Betsy Bird, which is collection development manager at Evanston Public Library. Before that, Bird worked for the New York Public Library. Bird's not just a librarian. She's also an author. She's written children's books like Giant Dance Party. She's also the co-author of an adult book, Wild Things, Acts of Mischief in Children's Literature. And she was a regular reviewer of children's books for the New York Times and for her blog, Fuse 8 Productions. We met Betsy over the summer. She was a great guest on the show. It's my pleasure to welcome her back to the download. Betsy, good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
We were talking about this earlier. Pete and I were like, can we call you the resident librarian of the download, right?
Yes, you can.
We haven't had any other librarians, though.
I have no competition. I'm just going to revel in that.
There we go. So last time we talked, the listeners had so many questions. So Betsy's here, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You got a question about a children's book? You have a recommendation for us? Want something you love? You're looking for a book to give your child for Valentine's Day? Always a great gift as opposed to candy.
Absolutely.
You know what? This is
a
great place.
If you want to chew on a book, go for it.
Yeah. You could chew
it's
on a
open.
Book.
Yeah.
So, Betsy, when Read Brightly, came to you to say, let's talk about this. I mean, what's special about this age group, 7 and 8 years old?
So I like to say there's two age levels where you lose kids as readers. The first one I'd say is when they're in middle school and they're transitioning from middle grade books to YA books. That's an easy place. That's a hard age right there. That's where you lose a lot of kids. But the one that even before that is when they are going from like the easy, Cat in the Hat, Elephant and Piggy, if you're from the 1950s, Dick and Jane. And then they're going from that to, I want to read the first Harry Potter, and there's got to be something between those, And that's where you get these early chapter books that don't really have a name. A universal name that everyone can recognize. And because kids read at so many different levels when they're 7 and 8, you can't just say, well, it's exactly this many pages with this many pictures and this many words. It doesn't fit like that. So the nice thing about the Read Brightly list is that it is a big range. It is from long-form picture books to chapter books that you could read at bedtime and everything in between that.
When we think about those kind of books, I mean, there's such a wide range. Where do you even start? I mean, do you start with classics? When you talk about this list of the best 50 books for 7, 8 year olds, what would be your starting place?
It's so tricky because, yeah, you're saying classics, but classic books didn't really cater to this age. I mean, if you think of all your classic books, you think picture books or you think Charlotte's Web. And Charlotte's Web will work for some kids, and it will not work for other kids. So where I've sort of been, collecting these books because they're such odd books. So I've sort of been collecting them over the years. And so I have my little list that I was able to go to where I was like, that book was awesome. And I'm just going to hold on to it because, you know, it's that weird age level. But publishers have totally caught on to this. And so every year you actually see more and more interesting sort of early chapter books that fall in that age range, which is good.
Well, some of it feels like whether it be Judy Blume or Roald Dahl or any of the sort of classic literature or children's literature, those seem to be the go-tos.
And actually, they did good early chapter books. You know, Roald Dahl did The Magic Finger, which is creepy, but good. The Twits, also creepy, so good. Judy Blume, Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing.
Right.
I mean, talk about your excellent book for luring children into. In this book, a boy swallows a turtle. See what happens.
You know, it's you're following what your school is. I mean, because there'll be a curriculum in the reading classes for second and third grade where they say you got to do a chapter book, you got to do this. A lot of times they choose the book and you go with it. So what do you recommend? Because a lot of times, you know, this is assigned reading for the kids. Is the idea that they continue, like if they get through that book and they want more, they come to the library and they check out other stuff, so check out that list? Or is this the kind of thing that you're talking to teachers and to other people who are saying, you should check these books out too because they could replace the ones that you've gone to?
Both. I would say both, absolutely. I mean, the problem with some of these lists at the end of the schools is that in some cases, these lists have been the same lists for the last, 20 years.
Right.
And the teacher's like, well, they're great books. And that may be true, but they are also, if you look at them, they're so white. Oh, they're so incredibly white. Except for, like, Tales Julian Tells, which is a great book, but there's a lot of really dated stuff in that. And it's like, the only, like, African-American, and they always put it on the list. They're like, there it is, bam, there it is. And so the nice thing about this list is it's very multicultural, very diverse, lot of different religions, ethnicities, you name it, on this list. A lot of new stuff, because we have some really good new books coming out right now. We do try to like show it to the teachers and they're like, hey, check it out. Awesome books. And they're brand new. And then we try to get the parents involved and the kids, because if the kid likes one of these, a lot of these are series books and then they can go to the library to get more. We would love that, but they can go and buy them.
Betsy Bird is with us tonight. She is the collection development manager at the Evanston Public Library. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the specific books that are on the list. Also talk to some of the listeners. 312-981-7200. What resonated with your 7 or 8 year old? What do you remember as somebody who was reading chapter books as a kid? What are you thinking about when you are getting assignments from your teachers? 312-981-7200. We'll be right back here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest, Betsy Bird. Betsy is the collection development manager at the Evanston Public Library. She's had a long history with children's literature. She came from the New York Public Library system where she was it children's collections? What was your...
I bought all the kids' books for Manhattan, Staten Island, and the Bronx.
There you go. And we talked about this in this great conversation. You can find it online. Last time we talked, because we talked about what that means for libraries, because there was such a transition, because it used to be, that's where whatever they got off for donations. Mm-hmm. So a ton of Clifford books. Mm-hmm. And you came in and sort of put a different spin on it and went after sort of bringing the libraries in New York to the 21st century when it comes to children's literature.
Sure.
So we talked about that already. Tonight we're talking about, at 7 and 8 years old is sort of the prime age to get kids interested in reading until they have another prime age in when they're a little bit older.
Right.
That's what we've established. Exactly. So let's talk about this list, this readbrightly.com list, best 50 books for 7, 8 year olds. They came to you, among others. When they come to you, what are your suggestions? What were your contributions to this list?
So I had a bunch. I have my favorites. We all have our favorites, the ones that you feel like that person who like loves a really obscure rock band and you're like, this one's awesome. And then if it actually becomes popular, like, man, I was into that early chapter book before you people were.
We're getting into the mind of librarians.
Yeah. That's my life. So here's what I contributed. And now they're going to be all popular. And I'm going to have to be like, I was into this. So there's like Anna Hibiscus by Ada Nuke. Okay. So this is a contemporary book set in the continent of Africa.
Okay.
Modern. Like, she lives in a city.
What's it called?
Anna Hibiscus.
Anna Hibiscus.
It's like first in a series. They're awesome. Her mom's white. Her dad is African. And she's got a million relatives. And it goes through like just basic date. It's like she's like the Ramona of like the 21st century, essentially. Not that not that there's anything wrong with Ramona of the 20th century. She is still up to date and fantastic. I have to couch my comments.
Up, right?
I know. It's like, how dare you?
How dare you take
how
on
dare
Ramona?
You take down Ramona? I am not saying Ramona is on this list as well. But yeah, so Anna Hibiscus, so funny, so good. The illustrations are killer. They're so wonderful. So I contributed that. Bad Kitty, I believe, by Nick Brule. I believe I contributed Bad Kitty. If you are unfamiliar with Bad Kitty, it is about a kitty who is not particularly good. they are early chapter books in which my daughter, who is 4, also loves them because the narrator is consistently yelling at the cat, who will physically harm the narrator occasionally if having to go to the vet or something like that occurs. They are very funny, very well done, and the art is fantastic. So love that. Wanted some silly stuff on there too. And, there's Lola Levine Is Not Mean, which came out last year. It's by Monica Brown. And this is a book about I believe she is Peruvian-American Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you've got like 500 of those on your shelf. But this, I just, you know.
This
one, right? Plays soccer. So there you go. And so that's a little different. That's a sort of a different take on your classic Peruvian-American Jewish girl early chapter book stories. So, well done there. You know what? If you just want to go like totally classic, My Father's Dragon by Ruth Stiles Gannett, which came out, more than 50 years ago. Really basic, about a boy who needs to save a dragon, like you do, and goes through very small adventures with animals on an island. And it is still a huge freaking hit.
Ask you, because you know all these books sound great and you're going to get them and you're going to introduce them to your child, but you know, we've kind of been talking about how we've seen a different generation approach reading because of the technology. Now, there, you could say one like with iPads and with tablets and phones and all that kind of stuff, that there's more sort of attention to the written word because that's the communication tool. But it seems like more often than not, you're seeing kids in this generation be distracted from reading or finding different things than reading a book. Our generation was similar. We had other things to do, but it didn't seem so far away.
It wasn't quite as far away. I mean, there was... That's just the thing. As technology gets better and better, there are more things to do. And yeah, we absolutely, like, you know, I watched my Space Ghost. I loved my TV as a kid. And my baseball cards and my comic books and my newspaper comics. And that's it.
That's it.
We didn't have much else. We had sticks and stones to play with. That's what I was like when I was... And Pokeballs. Yes. So kids today, a lot of distractions. They do like reading on their e-readers. They don't like it as much as we think they do. Recent study came out and says they actually prefer print books. Mm-hmm. That is not universal. That is not every single child. But by and large, they have their times when they like to read on their e-readers and their times when they don't. And so that's not even like a go-to when it comes to. Like here, like you can't like wave the Kindle and be like, look, I've got an electronic device. Read this book and you can use it. That doesn't actually work that well.
Well, I mean, what do you do? I mean, if you're an exasperated parent who wants your kid to get into reading and it's not working in some form or it's they're only doing it for homework and things like that, mm-hmm. What do you do to get your kid interested in books?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question. You know, because you can do that thing where you lure them in with the book that is already popular that they're seeing everyone else reading. So thank you, Diary of a Wimpy Kid. You know, you've got your books that like they see all the other kids at school, like, I've got the latest Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and everyone like goes and tries to get it, and then they really want to read that book. So that's peer pressure, 2 thumbs up.
Yeah.
When it comes to reading,
yeah.
It's actually a very effective method.
My son has Goosebumps. The same
yes,
thing, yeah.
Goosebumps, which yeah. was around was when my sister was a child. Goosebumps, for whatever reason, continues in popularity. Things, you know, for whatever reason, Babysitter's Club, same thing. Even with the terrible 80s covers with the ponytails coming out of the top of their head, still read very well when kids can actually get their hands on it.
Does it have to do with what you see when Hollywood will make a movie of Goosebumps or will make the Diary of a Wimpy Kid? How Is that a good thing? I mean,
I think it's a fine thing. I don't think it actually gets anyone to read the book. Yeah, right. I don't know any child who would sit down and watch the Goosebumps movie and be like, that looks like a fine piece of literature. I think I will go to my nearest library and check these Goosebumps series out. I don't think that's how it works. I don't think that's sometimes. But generally, I would watch this because, you know, I would buy these books for the library and I'd buy the kids' books and I'd be like, oh, the movie's coming out. And sometimes, like, I would buy just like a ton of copies and they would just sit there for whatever reason. And then sometimes I would buy like 4 copies and then it was like the biggest hit of the century, you know, like Coraline, for example. But that's partly also because, like, suddenly very canny teachers and parents would be like, oh, you have to read something. Oh, you enjoyed that movie. Well, look at it. There's a book, and you've just seen the movie. You might enjoy this book.
Right.
So I think there is a great deal of use with these movies.
So maybe that's a way that you can get
sure,
kids.
That's a lure.
That's a lure. Right.
I know some families that have done the, you can't watch the movie until you've read the book, and then be horribly disappointed by how Hollywood adapted it. But that's a learning experience you have to go through at some point.
Spoken like a true librarian, right?
Exactly. Now you can be curious about what they did to that book.
The list is the 50 best books for 7 and 8 year olds. It's at readbrightly.com. That's readbrightly, readghtly.com. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll take a break for the news because I do have some texts I want to come in, some questions for you.
Sure.
312-981-7200. When we come back, more with Betsy Bird with the Evanston Public Library here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Betsy Bird, the resident librarian for The Download. We just decided that today.
Get that on.
She's the collection development manager at the Evanston Public Library. She comes from New York, where she revolutionized the New York Public Library children's collection. Sure.
We're going to go with that.
We'll go with that.
Don't be listening, people in New York.
We're in Chicago. It doesn't go that far, right?
Exactly.
But we're talking about the Read Brightly list, the best 50 books for 7 to 8 year olds. You know, this is an interesting time because schools, like we have been talking about, schools have really been the catalyst, especially, you know, second, third grade classes, to assign chapter books, to, you know, to say this is the next one. I mean, book reports. Book reports are huge.
Oh, book reports.
You got to do, like, for a quarter, you have to do 10, 15.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also interesting because it's Black History Month. Mm-hmm. So they'll say, okay, you have to read a book from the Coretta Scott King Award.
Yes.
And again, we kind of talked about this off air, just about the idea that this is that concept of, like, we're just going to, anything that Coretta Scott King sort of, awards, you know, made it an award, that's good enough.
Right. If it appears on the list.
Right. And it's not necessarily always appropriate.
It's not, because the thing is, it's not, there's the award for illustration, there's the award for the writing, and the writing isn't done by the Coretta Scott King picture book, the Coretta Scott King, like, middle grade novel, the Coretta Scott King YA. It's just all sort of, like, lumped into one big pool, which is perfectly fine if you've got somebody who knows the books and is like, okay, this would be appropriate for this age level and this would be appropriate for this age level. If you don't, if you just sort of throw the entire list at a child and say, pick the thing on there that you think you want to read by the title alone, or sometimes if you're lucky, the description, you're going to get some pretty, you know, I'm not going to say inappropriate, I'm just going to say things that a child would not necessarily be assigned if the person knew what they were assigning.
And, you know, as I guess the question I'd have is, like, for some of the books, when we talk about, you know, age appropriate, at what time do you start seeing in middle school, fourth grade, fifth grade, whatever it is, where you start to see more complex ideas? For instance, death, you know, crime, poverty, those kind of things that start to come up where authors will take on a little bit more complexity as opposed to this character goes to the zoo. Look
right,
at the thing,
exactly.
You know, like that kind of thing.
I mean, and this list actually has Charlotte's Web on it. So, I mean, kids can take a lot. And I'm going to confess to you, I'm going to have to make a confession right here and now. My daughter, who is 4, is rather precocious. And I may read her things that are not entirely appropriate for her. So, and my husband and I will for half a moment be like, should we or should we not? And then she'll be like, yes! And we're like, well, she said yes, so that must mean it's okay. So there's this amazing graphic novel about the life of Harriet Tubman, Harriet Tubman's life, a lot of pain in that life, a lot of pain. And here I am reading it to a four-year-old, so I'm just going to put that out there. That's what you're dealing with here. However, there are other books that deal with very dark subject matter. For example, in the same series, a delightful book, Donner Dinner Party. Not reading that to my four-year-old.
Right.
thank you. No. Another book in the series on World War One. Not going there.
Well, I mean, that's so, the issue. I mean, at what point?
But I mean, that's the thing. It depends on the kid. I mean, there are some kids who would, you know, get through two pages of the Harriet Tubman book and be like, ah! And she may turn into that in 2 years. In 2 years, she might be like, I cannot take this. And we'll be like, that's totally understandable. And then when she's nine, she might pick it up again.
Well, I mean, I would say it's a good thing for parenting in the way that, like, for instance, we talked about the Coretta Scott King. This was a book, a Coretta Scott King winner called Yummy.
Yes, by Greg Nery.
And Yummy is about, I guess you call it a graphic novel, right?
It is a
graphic novel about Yummy Sandifer, which is a very well-known story in Chicago.
Yes.
And I was kind of like, wow, this is a graphic novel about, this is, if everyone remembers, I mean, I remember covering it as a journalist. It's like the young boy who killed, was a gang member, he killed. He then was caught by the gang. Like the gang ended up executing him.
Yeah,
it's just a terrible story.
Really young, yeah.
It's not like what you see on the news today, like on the South Side of Chicago. That's the book that my son is reading.
Right, and it was written for like a middle school audience, I'd say. Though it is owned by a lot of young adult libraries, like library collections.
But what I loved about the book, and I will say this, is that there is a complexity to it.
Yeah.
And what I really liked about it was I was like, okay, he was scared. Mm-hmm. He was scared, and you could see
how horrible his home life is.
Right.
You see why he made decisions he did, you know, be they good or incredibly bad. And you get it from the perspective of another kid, a fictional character who's sort of seeing him, both the good side of him and the really horrible side of him. Who is trying to figure out if he was... I mean, the whole point of the book is, was he a good or bad kid?
Yeah.
And which is what the media in the book is trying to figure out. I mean,
It's a very complex story. Yeah. Like, I myself was like...
13-year-olds,
okay, all right, so...
explain this.
I found myself a lot going, all right, go to bed.
Exactly.
But I mean, it definitely was a challenge for me as a parent to sort of navigate that story because it's a horrific story. And, you know, there's killing and there's gangs and there's Chicago and we live in Chicago. So there's a lot going on.
I mean, and as a parent, it's your total right to be like, this book is not appropriate for you. We're pulling this book. You know, that is totally your right. And it depends on the kid. I mean, there might be some kids who are like, you know, this is a very familiar story. This content is very familiar to me. I understand these characters. I live in this world in some way. You know, this book totally makes sense for me. And other kids who are going to be like, this book is actually making me like scared. I do not want to read this book anymore. Yeah. Yeah. Kids are wonderful self-selectors.
I can't wait. I am fascinated. We haven't done it yet, but I can't wait to see the book report.
Yeah.
I want to see what he pulled out of it.
Well, I want to see if anyone else in the class read it, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because, again, it was like, pick a Coretta Scott King winner.
And the thing with Coretta Scott King, and this is true of many books written for kids about the African-American experience, is so many of them are just like, civil rights, civil rights,
right.
And also slavery.
Right.
And to find something contemporary is incredible. Incredibly, you know, hard to find. Fortunately, like publishing now, we're seeing a slow increase in more books about contemporary African American life. But it is not by any means a vast number of books that come out every year.
Let's get to some of the text. 815 says, "When can you get them?" I guess it's them would be 7 or 8 year olds or kids. When do you get them interested in biographies?
I would say as soon as humanly possible. They make fantastic picture book biographies out there. And, you know, if you can hook a kid on a good biography. There is a series, and I will confess, when it first came out, I was like, this series, it's no good for the libraries. But it's fantastic. It's by Brad Meltzer. And he has this kind of Peanuts, Charles Schulz style that he takes to biographies. And some of them are like the standard biographies, like Helen Keller, and Jackie Robinson and Martin Luther King, but he'll also do like, and Lucille Ball. It's like, what? which is a great biography.
Right, right.
And they're great books. The kids get totally into them. Brad Meltzer. And I, you know, I'm sure there's a name in the series. No idea what it is. But if you look at Brad Meltzer and his biographies, you know, and I think they've got titles like I Am Martin Luther King and stuff like that. They are great books. They are, you know, the Amelia Earhart and all that. They look like they're five, like from the start to the end, but kids dig it.
That becomes an issue for parents too, because now schools, as you get older and you get in the third, fourth, fifth grade, they say enough of the fiction, nonfiction.
Well, and that's, the thing is, we often find that some readers, like boys, like nonfiction a lot. Like some type of boy readers, there are girls who like nonfiction absolutely as well. But what we've often found is that reluctant boy readers sometimes are nonfiction readers, and they're being forced fed this fiction for a really long time. On the other side of the coin, there's kids who just have only read fiction, and then you're feeding them true stories. The nice thing is that when I was a kid, like, nonfiction was, that was the vegetables with the
right.
meal. It was like, oh, goody, I get to read a book about the goods and services of this particular state. Wonderful. And now nonfiction is awesome. It's really, really good, really well written. If you can find a librarian or a bookseller who knows their children's nonfiction, you can get some killer stuff. Just like crazy good writing is going on right now. So we are in sort of a children's nonfiction golden age of literature, which is wonderful.
Betsy Bird is with the Evanston Public Library. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more with her. She's the resident librarian here for The Download. 312-981-7200. If you got any questions about children's books, stay with us. It's a Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Betsy Bird in studio. Good to have you back.
Thank
it was
you.
A great Good conversation this summer. I'm having a great conversation now. The Download's resident librarian. I guess it's she has other titles, too, not
do
just
I?
That.
I do.
You do. Collection Development Manager at the Evanston Public Library. Also came from the New York Public Library system, where she was pretty much in charge of ordering all the children's books for all of New York City.
Three boroughs.
Three boroughs.
I'm sorry.
They're more than three. All right, so let me go to the text, because there's more texts that come in. Anthony wants to know out of 815, when the Harry Potter books first came out, says parents wanted those books removed from school libraries. Mm. Why were they against those books?
Depends on which parent you're talking about. I mean, you've got some parents who didn't like it because of witchcraft. So that's, you're always going to get that. Then you had the parents who, right away, no one really paid much attention to them. It didn't really happen until the third book came out, and then people started paying attention to them. After the third book, they became a little more YA. They became a little more teen. Because he was becoming a teen, which was sort of an unusual situation. And so people were saying, no, these books are more teen because he's doing more teen things. And other people were like, no, he starts out as a kid, so it belongs in the kids section. And so, yeah, there was all sorts of reasons people wanted to move Harry around.
Do you see that? I mean, because you'll hear that once in a while in the media, it'll percolate up that somebody has a problem. A group will have a problem with a certain book and how it's being taught or how it's being sort of displayed in a library. Do you see that? I haven't heard a story like that in a while.
Mostly they just never go reported. Like, I think someone did a study once, and most of these are the only reason these ever get reported is if it makes the news, or if they're reported to the American Library Association, based here in Chicago, and they have like this official form, you know, for like challenges made within a school library or a public library to various children's books. And that's where you get the lists of like the top 10 most banned books of a given year, which does happen. You don't hear about it as often because it's usually just the same 10 books every single time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's only so many times.
What kind of books are on? What would be a banned children's book?
Oh, there's so many of them.
Really?
Yeah. Some of them would totally surprise you. Like The Diary of Anne Frank, sexual content. Because there are two different versions of it, you see. Oh, and sometimes people order one and they get the other one. But it's things like, there's a picture book called And Tango Makes Three. I think it's like 10 years ago this came out. And it's a true story. It took place in a zoo in New York City about two male penguins that were in love and raised an egg together. and you would think this was the most evil book that ever was ever made.
Really?
The,
yeah. So it's when social issues, political issues get in.
Yeah,
it's
social issues, political
it is,
issues.
Yeah.
It's content. You know, some books that came out for kids have a fair bit of swearing in them.
Really?
So, which people forget about. Bridge to Terabithia has quite a few damnits and hells in there. And people then people
so
are reading
essentially
it with their
parents
kids.
Yeah they read
yeah
the
they're
kids,
reading
they
with
bring
the kids
it back
and like
to
what
you.
The what's, why yeah. is this in the library?
Do you get a lot of feedback from people who come back in from who may check out children's books and they come back and they tell you what they think of it?
Generally, when I was working in New York, what would happen was just if someone had a problem with a book, they'd just say, "I think this belongs in the teen section." They wouldn't say like, "Ban it, ban it! Don't allow any other child to read it." That does happen if they think there are outdated racial things in it. But even then, that doesn't happen all that often. But yeah, the only borough where people actually tried to ban stuff was Staten Island.
They just didn't want it.
They're in completely different people. In
yeah, it's yeah. probably my friend Neil.
There you go. Okay. Well, I'll have a talk with him then.
Yeah, no.
Ask him not to do that
again. He just is probably just doing it as a bit. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So as, you know, what... Okay, so the schools get out, and they're going to get out here in May and June. Mm. And then in the summertime, what do you recommend parents do? I mean, because there's always been this sort of like, make sure they don't have the summer blah, you know, like...
The summer slide.
Like, when
your
you're
kid
in second...
Will, like, leave
yeah.
the school, and then they'll be, like, two grade levels behind in their reading if they don't...
It's all pretty much about reading. So, yeah. So the idea being, like, what do you recommend parents to do with spring break, with other places, or even complementary or additional to what's being done in the school?
See, the thing is, like the school will assign books... like for the summer, but what will happen is like the last 2 weeks before school begins, you'll suddenly get this influx of parents that are like, they haven't read all summer. They need to read like five of these books.
Right.
You must have them. What you do is if you want your kids reading over summer, you find what adults do. You find beach reads. You find the silly fun, you know, people are like, oh, as long as they're reading, you know, that's your attitude. Well, yes, quite frankly, yes. As long as they're reading, get the comics out, get the ridiculous, you know, Guinness Book of World Records. Get the Guinness Book of World Records. The guy with the fingernails that curl all around. Get that guy. That guy is very useful. He gets the kids reading. Get whatever, you know, the books on sports facts and figures. You know, we have a ton of them.
We do.
Just get whatever you can. You know, if they want to pick up your National Geographics, give them a National Geographics. If they want to pick up, you know, whatever. Just as long as they are reading and it's appropriate.
Right.
You know, go to, you know, get them what they think is fun.
All right, here we go. This is my final recommendation for Valentine's Day. This is something that I feel like would be a good thing to get books about love or books about, you know, books about Valentine's Day, or not even, but what do you recommend for someone who doesn't want to go get chocolate for their kid? Or buy a video game. What are suggestions for Valentine's Day?
For the parents to do for the kids for Valentine's Day. That's a good question. I mean, if the kid's going to expect chocolate, the last thing you want to do is be like, "Here's a big box and it's full of Encyclopedia Brown." It's like that's a terrible thing. That might be the number one way to make a child hate reading. I was promised chocolate and I got a book. Thanks. So thanks so much, Mom. No, but what you can do is you can give them both. We'll get them chocolate on the side.
What's the recommendation
for
the book?
But recommendation for the book, like a good Valentine's Day book for this age range?
Yeah.
There is a series called Mouse and Mole by Herbert Wong Yee. And there is a Valentine's Day one that is fantastic. It's kind of the capper on the series, but it is fantastic.
Go
for the whole series, but definitely go for this book. It is great. Well written, well illustrated, fun, great, great Valentine's Day book.
There you go. Betsy Bird, the resident librarian here in the Download, also has another, she has a day job too.
Apparently.
Collection development manager at Evanston Public Library. We're talking about the readbrightlys.com, the 50 best books for 7 and 8 year olds tonight. Betsy, great to see you. And you got to come back and we much more to talk about.
All right. I will do it. Thank you.